Welcome to the National Geographic Science podcast series. I am Barbara Quincer Coulter, Director of Research and Professional Development at National Geographic School of Publishing. Our guest today is Dr. Kathy Cabe Trundle, Associate Professor of Early Childhood Science Education in the School of Teaching and Learning at Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Dr. Trundle has enjoyed her work in science education programs for more than 25 years, including 10 years as a public school teacher. Her research focuses on children and adults' understanding of Earth and space science concepts, including misconceptions and instructional interventions that promote scientific ideas and understandings. Her publications include research reports, professional articles, and curriculum materials. She is also very active in the development of science teacher education and professional development programs. Dr. Trundle was the recipient of the 2008 Outstanding Teacher Educator of the Year, presented by the Association for Science Teacher Education, an international organization. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kathy, to focus on this very important topic, which is teaching science during the early childhood years. To help us all get on the same page, can you talk about the importance of science in early childhood education?
Certainly. First of all, early childhood education includes children at age 3 to grade 3 or preschool to grade 3, and the National Geographic Science Program includes grades K to 5. All of the points that we'll talk about today have applications for early childhood as well as elementary education. Teaching science at young ages helps children understand their world and build on their natural curiosity. If you've ever watched children at play with a water hose to make rainbows or look for earthworms after a rain, you know that young children are very curious about the world around them, and they don't hesitate to fully explore things that catch their attention. Supporting children at young ages as they engage with science also helps them develop scientific ideas which lay a foundation for future science learning. It helps them develop positive attitudes towards science and develop their scientific thinking and reasoning skills.
How can children's early ideas about science affect their learning of science concepts?
That's a good question. Children's ideas about science stem from their everyday experiences and interactions with the natural world. And oftentimes, these ideas are not scientific, and we call those non-scientific ideas alternative conceptions or misconceptions. For example, young children often believe that we can see the sun during the daytime, but we only see the moon at night. In reality, the moon can be observed, depending on the phase, sometimes during the day and at other times at night. Children don't usually know that the moon can be observed in the daytime sky. So these naive or non-scientific ideas about science influence their understandings of and learning about science concepts. They may interfere with children's abilities to see patterns. Non-scientific ideas may affect how children use language to describe their observations, and they may be resistant to change even after they have formal instruction. Misconceptions are very likely to be resistant to change, especially through traditional instruction. One really nice feature of the National Geographic Science Program is that the teacher's editions clearly identify common misconceptions that teachers can expect children to have about those targeted concepts, and the text provides a very clear and concise scientific explanation for the teachers.
Thanks, Kathy. And let's move into engagement. How can we effectively help young children engage in science learning?
Actually, that's a big question, but an easy question to answer because children are very naturally curious and they want to be involved. So effective science instruction includes children as active agents in the construction of their own knowledge. Children are not passive recipients who absorb facts from their teachers. And they're not empty vessels that we can fill with information. Rather, they're active constructors of their own frameworks, which they use to explain things that they observe. Effective science instruction promotes active engagement through hands-on experiences and meaningful discussions. It involves inquiry-based instruction and is relevant to children's daily lives and experiences. Teachers might be familiar with the concept of hands-on activities. Effective instruction for science goes beyond engaging with materials. Inquiry science, in addition to hands-on experience, also engages the children's hearts and minds. The minds-on part of science inquiry involves sense-making discussions about what the children are observing. In the teacher's editions for National Geographic, this discussion occurs through the types of questions that teachers ask as they help children label their own learning. The hearts-on aspect involves making learning relevant to children and their own life experiences. So in summary, effective inquiry instruction is hands-on as well as minds-on and hearts-on. So with this inquiry instruction, effective instruction always considers the ability of the children, and teachers of young children are usually great with this task. We must consider children's cognitive capacities so that we don't overload them or overburden them, which can hinder their learning. And we must scaffold the inquiry process and use scientific language and the uses of scientific language for children. What this means is that we should consider children's abilities and always challenge them to stretch their learning while not overloading them. One way to do this is through the scaffolding of the inquiry process and the use of language. Children should always be encouraged to use their own words first, their own language, to describe their observations. For example, children often refer to a crescent moon as a banana moon or a fingernail moon or even a smiley face moon. We should not discourage the use of the non-scientific descriptors. Rather, we should actively engage children in the use of their own words. Later, when we introduce the scientific labels like crescent moon, these labels have meaning to the children. The new words are not foreign to them. We can say that scientists call a smiley face moon a crescent moon, and we're linking or scaffolding the children's language to the scientific language. One of my favorite examples is related to another moon phase. Children often call a moon where the lighted part is greater than half but less than full a Buddha belly moon or a pot belly moon. After using their own words, they have an easier time remembering the scientific label of gibbous moon when it's connected with the pot belly label. In addition to scaffolding language, we must scaffold the inquiry process for children. At first, teachers have to model how to ask a testable question, how to design or test a process to gather data in order to answer the questions, and how to look for and find patterns in the data. Children must first see how inquiry is conducted through modeling with their teachers before they're able to conduct their own open inquiries. The National Geographic Science Program does an excellent job of helping teachers scaffold inquiry. Based on the needs of their students, teachers may select from a range of inquiry options provided by the program. These options include guided inquiry to open inquiry, where children can come up with their own questions and design their own tests or processes. In other words, the program offers options for teachers, and they can select the type of inquiry for which their children are ready.
Thanks so much. And let's stay on the topic of engagement. And what are some examples of how to engage young children in inquiry learning?
Well, Barbara, my research focuses on Earth and space science concepts, as you mentioned earlier. The results of more than a decade of research indicate that children of all ages should be making and recording observations and looking for patterns in the recorded data. These observations can be made in nature or through computer software and through images in textbooks. Also, students can learn through the use of data that's made available to them. In other words, the children are not required to actually gather all data on their own. They can use data sets that are provided to them and look for patterns. Using existing data sets can be faster and more efficient as a way to do inquiry. And the National Geographic programs include some data samples that teachers can use if they don't have time for the children to gather their own data. An example comes from observations in the sky and objects in the sky, which is my area of research. As I previously mentioned, one of the common misconceptions about objects in the sky is that the sun can be observed during the day, which is scientific, and that the moon can be observed only at night, which is a misconception. To address this misconception, children can make several observations in nature of the day and night skies and observe that, yes, indeed, the sun can only be observed during the day. Stars can be observed at night, and the moon can be observed sometimes during the day and other times at night. Alternatively, children can make observations through software programs like Starry Night, which is a commercial program, or Celestia, which is a freeware program. They can make observations with these programs and come to the same conclusions as they do with observations in nature. Children also can make observations from images in books, including those that show the moon in the daytime sky as well as the nighttime sky. These types of carefully selected and beautiful images are included in the National Geographic books. We made sure of that. I'd like to make an important research note here. I have several lines of study in which my colleagues and I have analyzed children's books that are related to science, and most of the books include some misconceptions in the text and the illustrations. These misconceptions can introduce or even reinforce misconceptions for children. I'm very excited that the National Geographic program offers beautiful nonfiction books, and each of these books was carefully analyzed by science experts to ensure that we are accurately representing the science concepts.
And let's stay on that topic of books and now move into literacy. And focusing on literacy and texts that are used in the science classroom, how can text be integrated with inquiry learning?
That's a good question. Traditional text-based instruction is not effective for science learning. Expository text should be used with appropriate instructional strategies which engage children in the inquiry process. In other words, reading about science alone can't be effective. We need to integrate that text with the inquiry process. One of the most important roles that teachers can have in effective science instruction is that of asking questions that children can answer through their own observations. Teachers should be asking questions to activate the children's prior knowledge, inviting children to make predictions, focusing the students' observations, guiding the analysis of data to help children identify patterns, and encouraging children to do problem solving. The 5E model that we use in the National Geographic program helps teachers to know how to ask these types of productive questions, and the teacher's editions provide teachers with a wealth of well-designed questions to help children engage with the images and the text. Examples in the text should be highly relevant to the children so that they are able to make connections with the text and their own personal experiences. Some of our books are specific to different geographic areas that the children can relate to. The diagrams should be clear and represent causal relationships. The illustrations and images should be integrated into inquiry-based instruction. Teachers can ask students to make observations of the images, and based on the observations, the children can make inferences. Students also can compare illustrations to data from actual observations in nature. In other words, they make the observations in nature and then compare them to images in the books. Again, the National Geographic Teacher's Edition guides teachers through this important and valuable process of engaging children with the beautiful images and the useful diagrams as well as the text.
You've shared a lot of examples, Kathy, with how National Geographic really helps prepare students for success and young children as well. Can you elaborate a little more about how this program will prepare children for success in science?
Sure. The National Geographic Science Program is very exciting for me as an early childhood expert. First of all, it includes grades K through 5, and so it's a K through 5 curricula. It's really important that science be introduced, as we talked earlier, to those very young ages, particularly the kindergarten ages. Nonfiction books are included in this series. Children love nonfiction text, and if teachers are familiar with National Geographic, they know that they have beautiful images, and the children really engage with those. Children will select nonfiction text for independent reading, and this program offers those nonfiction books. The series also has, for grades K through 2, leveled readers, and then it has two leveled readers in grades 3 through 5. The leveled readers are important for teachers because it provides access for them in a way that's comfortable for them through the literacy connections. Most teachers have more training in literacy than any other content area like science. Elementary and early childhood teachers should be more comfortable with this program because of the strong literacy connections. The format is very solid for literacy instruction. In fact, our author team includes two literacy experts. So not only are the National Geographic materials wonderful for helping children engage with science, they also provide solid instruction for literacy. And as I mentioned earlier, Barbara, the National Geographic Science Program provides a wealth of content background information for teachers. It identifies misconceptions, and it provides scientifically accurate explanations that are clear and concise. It uses research-based practices for science education, including the 5E learning cycle model, and many teachers and school districts are familiar with that. It includes inquiry investigations and materials, and we already talked about the importance of inquiry for young children.
And as we wrap up this podcast, Kathy, can you pose a big question in the spirit of the big questions within National Geographic Science that you want to leave with our listeners so they can effectively teach science during the early childhood years?
I love working with teachers who teach young children. They're very focused on the learner, and they know that young children come into our classrooms loving science, and they're very willing to explore and learn about the world around them. Young children are not afraid of science. As teachers of young children, we are laying an important foundation for future learning and positive attitudes about science. Our professional challenge, our big question is, how can we foster this sense of wonder, the wonder that they come in with, and support effective science learning for all children?
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Kathy. I really think our listeners are now better prepared about the needs of children in the early grades and how to really effectively teach science and address their needs.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thanks for listening to our National Geographic Science podcast series. For more information, check out the National Geographic Science Professional Development website for additional tools and ongoing support to help you bring science alive in your classroom.